Hello, and welcome to Holden Village. Today's date is October 2nd, 2004. This is a forum on Holden's food philosophy, part of the Holden Harvest Festival, with the food service coordinators and Holden's local farmers. Session number FO-2004-05. Let's listen in.
I figured it would just be pretty informal.
Been working all day on this, haven't you?
Only for my own enjoyment. Okay. So, I thought we'd just go around and kind of introduce the people who came here as farmers. My name is Paul. I'm one of the food service coordinators at Holden Village.
As am I. I'm Sonia.
We're the food service coordinators. And I figured a good way to start the discussion is just to read the Holden food philosophy, and this is kind of where we as the kitchen come at this whole thing. Yeah, exactly. Sorry. And I wanted, I figured I'd read this, and then I'd let people kind of introduce themselves and kind of talk about their place and where they come to this from. So,
we planned a lot.
The Holden kitchen is shaped by the conviction that our shared meals contain sacramental elements. When we gather at a common table, we understand that eating is more than simple refueling. We recognize that our food choices have significant consequences for those who gather food and for the earth that brings it forth. At the same time, the Holden kitchen wishes to celebrate and to uphold the gift and blessing of God's nourishment. We are committed to serving food that is healthy, celebrative, and not harmful to other people or the earth. Holden serves a diet that emphasizes whole grains, fresh vegetables, legumes, and nuts. We seek out suppliers that support workers rather than corporations. We use leftovers creatively and strive to eliminate waste. We hope that the weekly menu mirrors the lively conversation that occurs throughout the village. We welcome those who come to Holden to be both challenged and refreshed. We hope that our shared meals are a significant part of that experience.
So, forgot one part.
What's that?
You guys are lately, you've been into food preservation.
That's true.
Yes.
Of excess.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
very,
a little
very
excessive.
Cool.
This was the first pesto we've had all summer. It's that excessive. So we took it out of the freezer, especially for the occasion.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
It was stuff you made last year, though.
The pesto was from July, actually, and we've been making it as we've been getting basil, largely from Sunny Pine. So, yeah, we have been preserving a lot and doing freezing, drying, and canning. So trying to make it a practice for every year so the winter has more of the summer's organic produce, and we don't have to rely as heavily on food that's grown far away or stored in cold storage and shipped in miles of many fuels. So,
I've got a question. Are you guys gonna can tomatoes?
Tomatoes are a hard thing because they're the low acid food.
Yep.
So they really need to be canned at like a health department regulated facility, which we're not set up to do. So
yeah. We kind of stick away from the danger kinds of vegetables like tomatoes and beans. Mostly it's sweet fruits and things that we can. We don't really can too much. We don't have the labor to do it on this scale that we need to do it. So we've been doing a lot of applesauce, pear sauce, preserves, and things that we can freeze. So,
well, before we get too much further in this discussion, why don't we just kind of go around this way, and then we'll kind of, if you just want to kind of explain your farm or your operation or how you come at this Holden, how you come at the Holden food experience. Well, I mean, we can do it kind of in groups, like if you guys, as Sunny Pine, kind of just want to say, introduce yourselves.
introduce your plan.
Yes, okay. So we have quite a group of us here. I'm Ed Welch from Sunny Plant Farm. And starting with Caroline, Chris, Lexi, Dan, and this is Tim. And there's Jeff right here.
And I'm Sandra.
And there's Sandra. And then
where's Alex?
I don't know.
Who knows? Alex is here somewhere, and then this is Vicky, my partner, Vicky Welch. And we have one person who stayed behind who had to go to a doctor's appointment, and then we have numerous people that just come and go as through the summer. And in terms of the Holden experience, I mean, we've been bringing vegetables to Chelan, which get brought up here for 4 years, and it sort of transformed our farm from being fairly unstable terrain, because we were trying to sell a lot of our stuff to markets in Seattle, and that was not very secure, because the people in the supermarkets like Whole Foods and the other smaller markets in Seattle, they change fairly frequently, the managers of the produce department. And when they change, they almost forget who you were. And so then you say, are you still gonna buy stuff from us? And sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. And sometimes they want different things than what they said they wanted and now they don't want them. And in a different, it's just very, very fickle. Yes, very much, yes. And frequently they want us to sort the things into quarter-inch size categories.
Oh.
Yeah, because they don't want things that look a lot different from each other in the same display.
They don't want it to look homegrown, do they?
No, but they don't want people to try to figure out the one that they want. They want them all to look the same, so they just go and get it without grabbing everything. And anyway, it's very difficult. So in terms of our own farm, it's made a huge difference. And we're thankful that you like to take varieties of sizes and shapes. I hope that you do, because we send them.
That's what you've been getting.
Yeah, and plus, we really like the philosophy that exists here. And we would hope that someday we could learn things from here and apply them in our own farm. And so it feels really good to be supplied to here. And then, I guess I would say that it has helped us out tremendously in terms of our own farm. And we keep making mistakes, but we'll make different ones every year. And hopefully,
we appreciate that.
Anyway, plus coming here on this trip is you know, both a challenge and refreshing, because today I was trying to hike and keep up with Jeff and Josette, and that was a big challenge. And then it's just so refreshing to be out here in this beautiful scenery, and then eating the food, some of it that we prepared, but that everybody worked at getting here, is really a blessing. I have some other things, but that's all I'm going to say right now.
My name's Jeff Berman, and my wife and son and I live down at 25 Ock Creek, which is just up Lake and Fields Point, close to the B&B there. And we have, I'd call it more of a homestead than a farm. It's a small little piece of hillside. And our intention when we started our place was just to grow our own food, and it kind of got out of hand. The old timers would say, you know, the soil's so good here, you just throw the seeds out there, water, and stand back, and he was right. So our excess, it's been a variety of things, and as Ed talked about his experiences selling, and we've gone to different farmers markets, and we had some customers up in Stehekin, and that was always interesting, especially before they got any communications up there. But we we hoped they liked what they ended up getting. And then my wife's a massage therapist, and so she has some customers. And it would work out. We have some partners in our lane, and they actually go to the University District in Seattle and sell their food there at a farmer's market on Saturday and sometimes at a different market on Sunday. And for them, they've decided it's kind of worth their while to kind of get the most out of their time that they've put into it, and that's what they've decided works for them. And it's a lot of work, and people over there really appreciate the food a lot. And they grow the most unusual looking foods you'd imagine, and people there just love it. And I try and sell unusual things at the market in Chelan, and people wouldn't even look at it. So just a different kind of market. And so then, I don't know if it was Victoria or Chrissy, but I kind of heard that they were wanting to buy more local foods. And I wrote them a letter, and I said, our food is so local, it won't even make it to town. And so that's when it developed. And we have just a really small amount of what Holden's needs are, and mostly fruits and some vegetables. And so the kitchen people have been really patient and kind of just letting whatever we can grow come here and get used. And so it's mostly, like I said, excess and the extra things that we can't use. We put away a lot of our own food, and that's all for now too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who am I running into next? Yeah.
I run the Gibbs farm. Gibbs Organic Produce is the trade name. And I started...
My connection to Holden started in the early 90s, 91 probably.
I started bringing in my organic fruit. And it was before Chrissy, so I can't remember who the food service person was, but I said, are you interested in organics? And the person goes, yes, but I don't think the community is. And I said, well, I don't want any money for it, I just want to trade it for time for my family. And that's when Ivan and Rusty and Woody all got to come in here for the first time, was on a free trip from trading, I don't know, probably 20 boxes of apples or pears, whatever it was. And that went on for years. I never got a paycheck. I just was happy getting time in Holden and just seeing Holden turned on to organics for the first time. And then Tori came in and he started working on them. To do a little more in fruit, how about trying some produce? And about that time, I was up on a climb on Bonanza Peak, and I talked to Chrissy when I came on out, and I said, you know, I'd really love to break into the produce thing with you and kind of get out of this fruit stalemate. And she goes, what can you send me and when, you know? And so we sat down and we had a big chat, and I wrote up a list, and she said, well, how much is all this going to be? And she's going, oh, well, we got a limited budget to work with. I don't know if we're going to be able to do much of this, but let's try it. So then we started trying it, and it was basically things that we keep is what I was storing in, like sending in like potatoes or carrots or garlic or onions or stuff like that. And then the next year I asked her, well, how about some greens and spinach and that kind of thing, you know, and strawberries. And she said, yeah, you know something? We had a little food meeting last winter and they upped our budget. So yeah, we're gonna really go at it this year. And so now it's been, like I said, it's been 4 years, I believe, that I've been sending in fruit and producer. Vegetables. And then I got into the thing where, you know, I wonder if Holden would like serve some meat in here that's organic too and pay me the price that I need to get out of it for buying the organic feed and going through all the trouble. And they had bad eyes. They said, yeah, what can you send us? I'm like, I told them, well, I'll start sending you chickens and pork and beef. And so then I had to make arrangements with the butcher to get it all done in Holden's specs, because Holden has no use for a 2-pound roast. They don't have any use for a 1-pound package of hamburger. You know, they need 10-pound packages of hamburger and 10-pound roast. And they don't need steaks because they're not going to feed everybody a steak. You know, I had to learn all this, and then I had to get this information to the person that does all the meat cutting. And so that's really worked out good. It's to the point now where Holden passed, in my books, Holden last year took first place in my bookkeeping for the largest account, and they passed up Bellingham Co-op by well over $1,000. And Bellingham Co-op had been running number one in my life for many, many years. And I didn't think I'd ever see the day where in the county organization would pass up a big, well-established co-op like Bellingham Co-op. It's, I don't know if any of you have been in there, but it's an awesome store. And, you know, that relationship at Bellingham Co-op has been growing for 15 years. And I don't think they're going to let Holden hold first place, because they're, man, I mean, they're really aggressive in the buying of my fruit. I, you know, I told them that Holden had passed you guys up. What is Holden, you know? Where is Holden? So
now he's still Holden.
Oh boy, is that a challenge? We're up for it.
Now I'm so doggone strewn out in a million different directions, trying to chase wildfire and saw lumber and new logging and grow orchards and chase pigs back in and grow produce and berries, and it's just like I'm spread out in a million different directions. And so I was really glad to have Ivan come back home from Peru this year, buckle down and show a real interest in making a living on the farm. So my challenge as a father and a teacher is to get him the responsibility to where he feels like he's not just a worker, but he's a partner in the farm. And there's a real chance to make a real living there, not just some spending money, you know. And I did that with my oldest son in the logging business. And man, he just snapped. He jumped on that responsibility and on that personal interest and love in what you're doing, and it's just shining in him. And now Ivan's doing this with the produce thing. So I kind of think that in a year or two, I might just completely be out of the growing ADT vegetables and let them take it over. And I'll just do the meat thing and the orchard. And
I'll chase the pigs for you.
I think because most organic growers, I'm not saying all of them, but most organic growers are vegetarians. It's just a known fact. And there's not very much organic meat out there.
Sure.
It's real hard to get, it's scarce, and it's expensive. And that is, a lot of that is due to the fact that there's not the infrastructure of the organic feed supply yet. Mm-hmm. So there's people like me wanting to do the organic meat thing, but number one, there's nowhere to take it to get it butchered in a certified shop. It's got to have federal blessing, state blessing, plus state organic certification blessing. It's just like, who in their right mind is going to want to fight or buck the establishment to have a ma-and-pa butcher shop that can do all this paperwork on a regular basis every year to run, what, maybe $50,000 worth of business through there, see? So it's, we're really in a middle of the road thing where my goal is to get in the head of this curve and maybe even start growing my own feed, get a combine and a silo and a hammer mill and start mixing and blending my own feeds, which would be a huge, big undertaking for me. I mean, I think I'm doing a lot now. But then that would solve the problem. Not only would it make my meat more affordable to the common folk, you know, it would also fill that little niche in the county of Chelan here, so there would be a place to access this stuff, which right now there isn't. You wouldn't believe the phone calls I get from all over the state. No, those are Holden's pigs. Those are Holden's chickens. Half that cow's going to Holden.
Well, I'd like to kind of open the floor up for kind of questions and then other comments that people would like to make, ask questions of myself, Sonia, or any of the farmers or anything. Or bring up other things you'd like to talk about.
I've got a question. If you come an intern at one of these farms and don't know too much when you start at the beginning of the year and go through a full season, where are you at on the learning curve in terms of what you'd be able to do the following year? What's that like to go through 1 year if you haven't had a lot of experience?
Need two more years.
So a three-year process?
I'd say at the end of 3 years, you might be able to do something successfully.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know. That's just my opinion.
Ask the interns.
I would say that learning how to grow the food is a lot easier than learning how to sell it.
Amen.
That's true.
Good point. That's the hardest part of it all. I mean, the basic tilling, planting, and watering, and fertilizing all comes pretty easily. I think within a year, if you really focus on it, anybody can probably do something successful pretty quickly, but learning how to sell it is a really, really big deal. That could take years. And finding the niche market, you know, is tricky. Just finding a place to set up a farm, you know, where there aren't already a bunch of farms, organic farms. It takes a lot of searching, you know, you can't just go to a pretty valley and say, I'm gonna farm here, you know, it's, you know, you have to check it out first. But it's fun.
The longest I've ever had an apprentice stay is 2 years. And I've had people that have showed up with extreme enthusiasm, come out of there, and then the next year, this one guy, he become a foreman running 14 young folks on John Gunning's family farm over in Olympic Peninsula. So he went from my place to this huge production operation with two or three tractors and all this flat, nice, fertile ground on the peninsula and established markets and everything. And he just flourished. I mean, that one individual, he learned enough to actually go out and get a paid position. But, you know, that's one out of 30, maybe. So it can be done. It depends on the individual, I mean.
Are you folk over here organic also?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. We've been certified organic since 1988, when they started certifying with the state of Washington here in Washington.
What is our number?
14.
14. So we're the 14th in the state.
Great.
John's number one.
Well, Paul, I was fledging here
wondering what Grant could say about the period of time too, because 3 years for me, let me briefly indicate the situation. When I, Mike Rogan, the Gala apples that were in your salad tonight were from our place. I've shipped Galas up here now, thanks to Paul, and thanks to Winnie Weinrib and Jersey Brothers introducing me to it. So it's that beginning stage with me right now. I haven't got a lot of learning curve left. At 60, I'm supposed to be out of it. We assumed the family orchard. And so my desire was somehow wondering whether there was talk or capacity within the Tilton 18 or this arena to make available an orchard for beginning people and allow them to gain some of the benefits of it. I haven't thought it through at all yet, but the type of question that Lars was asking was provoked it principally because I thought, yeah, if I had people who were interested, because I can't handle the work alone and we need help. The labor is our primary problem. And so trying to find people who didn't want to actually, but are good and wanted to stay there. I obviously have not connected to the right sources yet.
Organic volunteers.
Yeah. Put yourself on the internet. Mm-hmm.
It's a website called Organic Volunteers. This is something that everyone could check out if they haven't yet. It was started by a couple of people in Olympia, I think 4 years ago, and it's just grown exponentially. And it's how I think almost all of us at Sunny Pine originally found the farm. Almost, I said, Tim. And
it's an Antra.
And
Tilt.
It's a really good connection for people who are looking for help and people who are looking to learn, and it's just a really good way. So.
Thank you.
What was the name of that?
It's organic, called Organic Volunteers. Just all
dot
over
org.
.org or .com or something.
.org.
Well, I'd like to say, just as someone who's been working at Sunny Pine this year, I've worked at different farms, and it's the whole selling to stores thing is always really frustrating, I think, because like Ed was saying, a lot of stores want the vegetables to be uniform, and the vegetables want to be anything but uniform. Carrots like to wrap around each other, and, you know, the beets like to have two heads sometimes, and just all these things happen. And you know, the majority of stores in this country, just they don't actually illustrate what vegetables actually look like. And so then even when it switches over to organic vegetables, people expect the head of broccoli to be like this big, and that just doesn't happen in the desert. So I think it's just amazing that to have Holden as a customer, because you guys seem to actually appreciate real food. And it's just refreshing, you know, because for a lot of the stores, when we harvest stuff, it needs to look like this perfect picture image of what this food's supposed to look like. But I don't know, we eat the same food that we send to you. It's not like there's anything wrong with it. It's actually quite wonderful. It's just, it's really nice, so I really appreciate that relationship.
I had never eaten organic vegetables until I came to Holden, and I just thought it was kind of, you know, hype stuff. And I was amazed at how much more flavorful, mm-hmm. especially the carrots, so much more flavor, you know,
yeah.
than what I had been buying in the supermarket at home.
That was a stark difference for us when, you know, either we move from the winter into the summer when we start getting the produce all you folks are sending to us. You know, we've been subsisting on Cisco carrots, which are of course uniform and all this long and, you know, just about that wide and virtually tasteless. And then we get a batch of your carrots and whoa! Everybody goes,
like,
what?
Don't do those, we don't want to ruin them.
Well, we need to say carrots to some of those. And everything else, you know, every bit of produce we get from you is beautiful and so tasty, and I just find myself dreading the winter, and I think that's probably why I've been hoarding in that preservation way, so that we have something interesting to eat this winter. So. Thank you, too. Anyone else?
I appreciate, one of the reasons why I appreciate selling our produce here is because you all take it as a nourishment for your body and as well as your soul. And I think that that's really the key to farming is when you're growing it, you're actually imbuing it with the energy of spirit from not only yourself, but from the whole environment. And so when we sell our food to somebody that also appreciates that, then it makes us really feel good. And it's actually, I think, takes people to do that. And so like machines and automated systems don't necessarily do that, I don't think. And then plus invoking the spirits when you're working really is important. And we do that basically. Even the interns, I feel, have that same awareness and quality when they go out into the field. Because that's the kind of people that come to do this kind of work. So we don't have to train them in that, actually. It's just part of the way it is. And the other thing I wanted to say was that we're all trying to become more sustainable is the word, and it's kind of hard to define that word, but it's relative in the sense of going from where we are to where we want to go. So we're not there, but we're moving in that direction. And so I don't suggest that we want to get rid of you as customers, but it just seems like one of the goals of Holden might be to actually start the process of thinking how to create some greenhouses and start to, you know, grow more of your own stuff.
And I think that a lot of people in the village would be completely excited about that. Yeah. It's hard because we're a historic site.
Oh.
And so we can't build those kinds of buildings, you know, without a whole lot of, you know, a whole lot of red tape. And even if we did, I mean, I don't think it took us 20 years to get a permit to do Chalet 2, you know? And that's just because it burned down, you know? To rebuild what was there, you know?
Yeah. So maybe the B&B site would be useful.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it wouldn't have to be like an isolated position. Like, you could actually have a rotation where people that wanted to go out could be in charge of that particular.
I mean, it would be amazing to have a Holden farm.
Yeah. When that would be good. It could even be part of the training for your high school kids. Or
exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it just mm-hmm. so much.
Well, you know, the land at B&B would work really well. Mm-hmm. And there's water there, and there's a lot of land. Mm-hmm. And it could even be incorporated into a B&B staff position, but there could be maybe one person that would oversee it. And,
or we could hire one of you guys, you know. Yeah.
And I mean, somebody. Did you meet John Nickel?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Somebody like him. He'd be
yeah.
Perfect,
yeah.
And it could be like Ed was saying. You know, the school could be part of it. It could be, and you could grow a lot of food there. I mean, you could even grow things like raspberries. You know, there's enough land for those kind of things. But for sure, just starting out with vegetables. It'd be worth. I don't know who would start the ball rolling.
We could.
Historically, you've had a situation there in the Chuck 5 in the past, way back.
Yeah, we
started
going.
First.
Yeah.
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 I remember looking at those purchase orders where we bought stuff from the B&B.
Dane and Jeannie Johnson. Or Dane Johnson and Gene, they did that at the B&B. They did a lot of the building of the B&B, and they still live in Chelan.
Mm-hmm.
And talking with Dane, that was like, boy, that should be great if Holden wanted to do that. So there's a resource right there that's actually done it.
Wow.
They sold enough vegetables to Holden. They were running the B&B. They sold enough vegetables to Holden to pay for their flight to Central America.
Wow.
Amazing.
That was how they got
that
first
it.
And chickens, too.
Incredible indoor garden system in
it. It was a greenhouse.
Yeah, and it had the dryer vented in to warm the soil. It was really
That building,
very well
it's called the greenhouse. Yeah. It's called the greenhouse for a reason.
Right.
Right.
And yeah, they used to, and you could grow all those dogs there for sure.
Did they dismantle that part of it? Or?
No, it's all there. And if it's dismantled, it's only temporarily dismantled.
It was the end of it that faced the other building. It had a beautiful walk-in, bench high, waist high, whatever it was. Garden system.
Wow.
They had chickens.
And I have to say that getting food from our farms that we work with, and then also, you know, the lawns and gardens with that teeny tiny little garden up there, when you come in with a little bowl of arugula, it's like, it kind of, for me personally, it gives me a virtual secondhand joy of gardening, which I love desperately and miss desperately being up here that I don't get to garden, so it's quite wonderful that at least I get to, you know, visit the farm sometimes and then also see what comes out of your soil. But it would be very exciting if Holden could do a little bit of its own, even just for educational purposes.
I think though part of the joy for me of my job is being able to work with people like you guys, you know? And I think I would miss that if we had just did our own farm, you know?
Yeah, I know. Doesn't it?
I mean,
yeah.
It's ever since we went and visited the farms that we visited in July, it's just been great to have in my mind these people who were generally nurturing our food, you know, until it grew and, you know, came out and then came to us. And it's a real gift from you guys, you know, to have these meals that are made from the food that you grow.
That makes me think of, you were saying it's hard to define sustainability, and one way that sustainability often gets defined, it seems like, is people doing everything for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd like to just bring up the whole concept of like interdependentness.
Mm-hmm.
and like, definitely fossil fuels are not sustainable and we all know that, but like interconnectedness and interdependentness is sustainable, because we would all go crazy trying to do every aspect of our lives for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So it's cool to just think about that.
It's always important to realize that our community as Holden, but also as, you know, the world, goes beyond what's just kind of immediately around us. And it's a great concrete way of realizing that.
Someone on that sustainability issue, the film that Grant is in, I brought up a copy this year. I wondered whether you still might want that left here so that you could view for an hour what had been occurring on PBS, the discussion of sustainable agricultural community.
We actually have a copy of Broken Limbs. Yeah, and we've done something like this forum and shown it before.
Great.
A couple times this summer.
Thank you.
I'm just curious where you think maybe the future of the Holden food philosophy might be headed. Like, can you see a time, perhaps 5 or 10 years down the road, where we don't even have a Cisco contract, or is that just not even feasible?
Well, there's a
not a certain products, just we can't technically. But
there are some things that I mean the biggest roadblock towards, you know, eliminating the whole Cisco part of the equation is the amount of coordination that takes, you know? I mean, it used to be that the food service coordinator had 2 orders that they made, you know? And they just got a price check from Cisco and FSA. You know, whoever was cheaper, they'd buy that from that week, you know? And now, I mean, I coordinate 15 orders, you know, orders from 15 different places. And I mean, I'm sure you guys know that sometimes I lose it a little bit, you know? Availability list? Sure. You know? And,
it's like French onion soup.
Exactly, you know? And so it's difficult. It's a joyous struggle to have. But that is, it's hard. And there are things, I mean, that I don't know where we could get, like, there's not an organic chocolate chip maker, you know, in Chelan, you know, or in the area. So there are some things that we depend on larger organizations to provide for us that we don't have the resources to provide. But I do really look forward to the time. I mean, well, we talked about when we were at the farm, when we were at Sunny Pine Farm, about doing some kind of a CSA type thing, where we would have a lot more input into what goes in the ground and what comes out, you know, so we can engineer that so it's a better, a more complete fit, you know, so we're not supplementing as much with Cisco. And I think that's a goal that we can have in terms of produce. You know, I don't think there's a reason why we can't stop ordering produce from Cisco in the next 5 years. I mean, it's going to depend on a lot of, it's going to mean a lot of interdependence, you know, like we were talking about. But,
Yeah, it might also mean, I've had this talk with you guys and also some of the past kitchen people. Holden's meals are incredible, and it's rare that I can go to a place, I can go anywhere away from my home and I don't have to think about what food am I going to bring with me. And I didn't bring one piece of anything here. And it's a real comforting thought for me. And at the same time, Holden can even get better. And I know one of the issues was people really wanted tomatoes in the winter. Well, you can't get tomatoes in the winter except from Cisco. You know,
and
so
horrible.
Those kind of issues, you know, maybe when there's a ton of squash in the fall, eat a ton of squash, you know, and so some of that might take some flexibility. I know the staff probably could deal with it, but maybe the guests would have a little more trouble with it, and it could just kind of deepen your philosophy in the way that you provide food to the people here.
You could say that you provide food in that season.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Seasonal
vegetables.
Yeah.
Seasonal.
And we do try and do that as much as we can. It's interesting. This is something that I've thought about. We have only two menu rotations where we have the things that we eat in the winter and the things that we eat in the summer. And that's not complete, really, you know? And so it's hard to think about, you know, so are we just creating a menu from scratch every time, you know, as we go around? Every week we're thinking, what are we going to have on Wednesday? What are we going to have on Tuesday, you know? So there's a balance, but I think a balance that can be struck.
And we could also simplify, you know? Quite a variety of meals we serve, and even then, you know, living here a year, it kind of gets old. And you think, why is that? You know, can't we simplify a little more? And a lot of our meals are quite elaborate. I don't end up thinking that after preparing them for so long, but people come up here and they go, I can't believe that meal. We never eat anything like that at home, and it's soup and bread and salad, you know? And so, you know, we could stand to even simplify more so that we could be in tune with the seasons more. But it would definitely take a lot of coordinating.
Have you ever relied on Spokane Produce weekly or bi-weekly? Or?
No.
Because they come into the valley for Vicky's. I know. Mm-hmm. They're like a Charlie's Produce, only they come from Spokane.
Oh.
Charlie's comes into Wenatchee, but Spokane actually comes into Chelan once a week.
Do the green bean delivery?
Yeah, the green bean CSA delivery.
Like the green bean, yeah.
And they could probably drop right at the boat for what you can't get. You know, I would suggest you get carrots from them if you can get them from Ed. But you certainly could probably get tomatoes from some organic source, melons or whatever throughout the year.
Yeah.
That they get.
Yeah. It's sort of like every year, you know, the connections keep building, and that's what's really beautiful about our connection with the farms is that it's a constantly changing and evolving process. And, you know, with each connection we make and people we begin buying from, you know, that's one more layer in the possibility of what we can do with our food, and also one more connection to the community outside of Poland. So,
celery is one of the things that I will not eat unless it's organic, because of the way it's grown, it collects a lot of the chemicals within the structure. It's so scabby to one of those. And to me, celery is like a mainstay for all of your cooked dishes and your slaws and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And who can grow a really good celery unless you're on the west side somewhere or something, maybe.
Yeah.
So you got to go to an outside source, and Spokane could probably give it to you organic.
I've got a kind of little story of how our relationship evolved here. The first year I started bringing organic veggies, it was doggone near a nightmare. Phone tag extraordinaire. And it was you guys trying to get a message to the B&B. The B&B trying to call my house and actually get me on the phone. Which is doggone near impossible. And then they would leave an order, and by the time I got the order, there either wasn't time to get it all together, or it wasn't even something that was ready that time. You know, it was just like, how am I going to possibly get this together? And, the grace of the Lord kind of let some of it slip through the cracks, and instead of getting discouraged, they got encouraged, holding things. And that encouraged me. And so the next thing I could see to happen in my life and with our operation was I was going to have to start making a point of coming into Holden, getting to know the cooks, getting to know the food service people, and getting to know the community. And with that, I could work out a schedule, what I wanted to grow. And so there's a huge coordination step that got eliminated. That was the phone. For you guys, it was probably a record or
a
recording. I don't know how you do it, but then the next part of the whole story goes, I started talking with Chrissy. Well, what is Ed and Vicky sending exactly? You know, if I'm going to send you guys zucchini, and they're going to send you zucchini,
we're going to have too much
zucchini. I mean, what are we going to do? You know, we're going to make zucchini bread every day, or how are you guys going to deal with this? You know, and when you get too much, how are you going to get back to me to tell me you got too much? Well, the way we got around all that is holding these little chats around a cup of coffee and sitting around and working out pre-season kind of agreement, a lot like you would do with a CSA. Mm-hmm. And instead of talking about pounds of this or ounces of that, we were talking about entire tractor beds. Like, this entire tractor bed is going to be Holden sauerkraut. This entire tractor bed is going to be beets for Holden, or this, whatever, spinach. And then the next challenge was to get that little piece of paper, or scratching on a piece of paper, to change hands as the cooks and the food service coordinators and all that changed hands.
That's right.
So what happened last year, I hope never happened. And it was time to butcher my beef. I called up Bed and Breakfast. I said, send me down some coolers. I'm going to be sending a beef up. And they said, whoa, put the brakes on, man. We don't have any room in the freezer. The freezer is jammed full. Besides that, we bought a beef from somebody else. We don't need yours. Well, what do you think that did to me? I mean, I only had so much hay in my barn to feed so many head of cattle through the winter. So here all of a sudden I had an extra cow or steer that was spoken for, but yet wasn't quite ready. So that meant it was going to take a ton of hay away from the other animals so I could coordinate this whole thing. Well, you got it. With a long distance connection like Holden to Leavenworth or Holden to Twist, there's a communications breakdown, but you gotta have a certain amount of grace in life to wanna make it work. And it's kind of a spiritual thing. It's not really a financial thing. Because if it was a financial thing, you'd go to Charles Produce, you'd go to Spokane Produce. You know, you'd be unloading pallet to this and pallet to that. You know, and to see that flexibility work, it had to work both with Holden and with me.
Yeah.
And so, I guess my question to you guys is, did you ever see the notes that Katie Poo and Sonia wrote down last January, or did they just go in the garbage can?
I got them.
You got them, so, yeah, that's good. Yeah, I'm supposed to be.
So
that, I don't know how you guys feel, and I'd like to get some input from it, but I really had a good feeling the last 2 years that I wasn't going to be sending up potatoes when Ed was harvesting his potatoes, or, you know, I wasn't going to be trying to off my garlic crop the same time Ed's trying to off his garlic crop, you know, it let me know ahead of the planting date that this is going to have to go to a CSA, it's going to have to go to a farmer's market or whatever. It's not going to be going to Holden. And that's all I needed to know.
Yeah.
And then I just kept, what I did is I just kept that piece of paper that was a duplicate of what Katie Kula had. I just kept that on the clothesline in my house so I could read it. And it started off with spinach and it ended with wine saps.
Yeah.
You know, and I could look at that once a week and know, okay, this Thursday we're going to be dropping this product. And they can kind of expect it to come because they got the same note paper that I got. You know? And the thing that, if this connection with our farm wouldn't have been in place this year, I would have been in dire straits. Because we did not have the farm help to market everything we were growing. And you don't know how glad I was to be able to get in that car at 7:38 in the morning, or pick up whatever it was, go to Fields Point, drop the stuff, give a few hugs and friends on the dock, and then head home and go farm.
Yeah.
I didn't have to sit at a farmer's market, you know, for hours and hours. I could get back home, get back to what I was doing. And so that really helped the labor shortage thing this year.
Yeah.
And there was no limit. That was the other thing. But you can't send me any more than $300 worth of produce because we just don't have it in the budget. Well, that wasn't even an option this year. It was just like, when it's ready, send it. We'll send you the check. You know, and the check's always on time. That's another great thing about it too. You can count on that as a steady job. Mm-hmm. Where I can go to the farmer's market, I'm not going to know what I'm going to bring home that day. Mm-hmm. You know, I could bring home $50, or I could bring home $500. You don't know.
Yeah.
It could rain, it could blow your canopy over you. You cannot even make it to market because the truck broke down. But I knew. When I woke up Thursday morning, I had to make that boat on time. And that was the only for sure thing that was going to happen, was I had to get that boat on time.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to share all that kind of how it evolved.
Yeah.
I just want to keep working on that pre-season planning so it feels more like I'm growing for a CSA, but you guys aren't fronting me the money up front, which I don't want anyway. You know, it's all paid for when it's delivered and received and ready to go. And I like that concept that Holden's going with, but still, as a CSA, you know the stuff's going to get sold. At least those tractor beds that we had talked about.
It seemed to me like that was really valuable to coordinate ahead of time to know exactly. I mean, certainly one thing that all the farmers can do is to provide a crop calendar, you know, what's available when, or what mm-hmm. is likely to be ripe. You never know because
well,
of the weather. But what is generally likely to be ready for what period of time when. And then you can let us know what quantities you want then. And then you can compile your lists from all the farmers in all your spare time. And all the list of who has what ready when, and then you can figure out these menus.
Yeah.
So that maybe you have spring, summer, fall, winter instead of just
exactly.
summer, winter. Or whatever, and maybe it isn't those categories either. It may be just when groups of certain things become ripe.
Sure.
But you could coordinate, but you'd know because you had the calendars.
Mm-hmm.
You'd know what you were going to have when.
Yeah.
I think really
that's exactly the thing that I would love to do.
This one seems to me to make sense to do. And another thing you can do here is storage. My memory is that it's really hard to ship you stuff in winter because it freezes on the boat. And so, but you can take stuff ahead of time and store it, which you do, as I recall. You store a lot of things,
yeah.
And, you know, and maybe you can store some things that you aren't storing now, like carrots and beets, or maybe you already are. I don't know, but it would seem like there's a lot of things that can be stored, as well as, you know, some that you just have to can or pickle or something. But you know, there's a lot of things that were done in the past before there was a lot of fancy technology that still totally work. But getting them to work on the scale is, you know, quite the challenge.
Yes.
Part of our preservation mania this year is that we finally sat down with Harrier.
Utilities coordinator.
Yeah, he just kind of does everything, and he sort of tells us when we have to start turning off appliances. You know, we've got two big walk-in refrigerators and two big walk-in freezers, and we usually shut one of each of those down for the winter. And he's also our most avid vegan. He eats almost only vegetables, so when we told him, Harry, we think if we can keep these open through the winter, we can store more stuff from the summer. And he started thinking. He's like, I wonder what that means. And then looked at the energy and he figured, you know, we can balance things in other ways in the village, you know, as long as it's a good winter for power, which it was last winter. And we were probably going to be able to keep both our freezers open and possibly both the fridges, maybe only one, we'll see, for most of the winter so that we can do what we're doing. So, you know, it's really, there's so many factors in living up here. It's like, if you get a winter where the energy is just low and the creek isn't providing the water for the hydro, and we don't have the space to store it. So, it's
how cold does a refrigerator when it's off in the wintertime?
It's not cold. We usually store paper products and things inside of it.
You don't have to have a too cold to store beets and carrots.
Well,
yeah.
you don't need any electricity at all for that.
Could
well,
do
that. What we also have is one of
can't
our...
Can't we just put it out in the snow?
Yeah. One of our...
just have a root cellar.
One of our lockers has a vent to the outside so that circulates. Mm-hmm. So we can circulate the cold air into one of our dry lockers, which works really well.
That's where we store a lot of that kind of stuff, and then, you know, things that we're preserving. Since we can't can a lot, it's just too labor intensive for us, we can freeze, so then we can keep the freezer open, and then we have more room for meat and other things, and...
Great.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's quite a process, and then, you know, our job turns over about once a year, So, yeah. And I don't know how you folks deal with that.
Bless you, bless you, bless you.
We just hope you can pass the word on.
Yeah, so.
Where are you? Where the buck is coming from?
I really think the ideal situation would be if we had two food service coordinators for 3 years and they could set up a whole system and then we could go back to every
Are you volunteering to stay?
Nope. Nope.
Or can it be me? If at least your two jobs didn't switch over at the same time.
Yeah. So there's funny little things about Holden.
Both new at the same time.
Totally out of control.
Thank you guys for working with us, you know. Understanding that you get a new person every year about. That's, Holden appreciates that grace.
I had something to mention about the interns. Ed's farm and Grant's farm uses interns throughout the summer. And as I mentioned at the beginning, we're just a tiny little place and we haven't had anybody help us. But this last year, we had two people from Holden that were interested to come. And through your continuing education program, maybe it's called, or something like that, they were allowed to come on staff and come and work for a week in our place. And so I'm into having that happen more often in the spring and the fall, especially, because I think in the summer it wasn't available from your standpoint, because it's so busy. But this couple came in the middle of May and stayed a week, and we had a great time. And we've got a lot done. I was amazed at how much we got done. So May and even September and October can be really good months. And so I'm just kind of mentioning to you to pass the word on. Hopefully you might know at Holden that might want to do something like that. That would be another addition to our connections. Grant, people didn't hear your song.
A song?
Yeah, you were singing when we all were coming in, but most people didn't get to hear it.
Yeah, you should probably play that again.
You should probably play it again.
We gotta start with a song again. So.
Deer. So, what do you suppose happens? As soon as you get a row of garden weeded, where's that hog go? You guessed it, goes right in that weeded patch. And then what does it do? It chews a hole in the triple tape and makes a mud waller right where your veggies go. Probably raised 100 hogs and never raised a jumping hog until this year.
Thank you.
Say that most of the people that leave that are interested are in the kitchen just because they've had contact with the farms. And I'd say there are some people. And
not a lot, but we're definitely there to kind of help push people in that direction if they're interested. But, you know, aside from the staff who live here year round, the people who come are in and out so fast, you rarely even know their name sometimes, so. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we've been trying to be as much of a resource as possible. Yeah.
That could be something that could be put up on the
Don't know what you're doing after Holden?
Wow.
Local farms.
Why? Yeah.
Well, thanks everybody for coming.
Yeah, thank you. I like cabbage a lot. I want to see all of you in class.